Thank you, blessing, and welcome, Dimiake. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, January the 9th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And this is Ndimiake Mokalielie.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The government has ordered fuel traders to reduce the price of fuel, citing a drop of oil prices on the international market.
Our own fuel prices on the market have not gone down that much in tandem with crude oil prices, but should, however, go down to levels that reflect crude oil prices.
Villagers facing eviction from a Mazoe farm to pave way for First Lady Grace Mugabe's projects have filed charges of contempt of court against some top government officials and Police Commissioner Augustine Chihuri.
So we have managed to allege, and we will be able to prove before the court all the requirements for contempt of court. And in relation to the agent chamber application, we made the allegations that it's unconstitutional what is being done.
And the shutdown of local banks worries Zimbabweans.
The government has ordered fuel traders to reduce the price of fuel, citing a drop of oil prices on the international market. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Energy and Power Development Minister Samuel Undenge issued the directive Friday saying oil prices have dropped by almost 50% on the world market. Since June last year, crude oil prices on the international market have gone down from $118.18 to $71.83 per barrel. Undenge told a news conference in Harare today that all fuel traders should reduce fuel prices by January 14th, adding that the government will take stern measures against dealers who would have defied the directive.
Our own fuel prices on the market have not gone down that much in tandem with crude oil prices, but should, however, go down to levels that reflect crude oil prices, having factored in all costs relevant to obtaining the refined products that we buy. The major reason for this is the fact that the local industry's response to these international price variations have not been quick enough, hence the current outcry by the motoring public.
The energy minister also said a hike in fuel prices should be effected at least 2 weeks after the announcement of an increase in oil prices on the international market.
That would cut down on our huge import bill. You recognize that when we go to E15, as we go up the ladder, as more ethanol is produced, then it means we import less petrol. And internally, we generate economic activity. Not only that ethanol is used for petrol, the byproducts are used to produce electricity, to produce energy. And if Zimbabwe is to develop, we should encourage such projects.
Some fuel dealers told Studio 7 that they have not reduced the price of petrol and diesel because they are still selling carryover stocks. But Undenge noted that it only requires fuel traders a maximum of 2 weeks to finish selling their stock. Fuel dealers are currently selling diesel and petrol at an average price of $1.50 and $1.50 per liter respectively. Responding to a question on why blended fuel remained expensive, Undenge said the price reflects the cost of transporting ethanol fuel from the blending point to service stations. Some economists say they expect prices of many commodities to go down following the reduction of fuel prices. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
A long-distance transport operator, Issa Mfumi of Manicaland Province, speaks about local fuel prices with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
We welcome the decision by the minister to urge all fuel operators to reduce the price in relationship to the low price of fuel on the world market. And we want to thank the minister for that directive and to urge all the fuel operators to implement by reducing the price of fuel from what they buy, and they put a reasonable markup for for them to remain viable in business.
But as the transport operators, are you also going to reduce the fares for the commuters?
Yeah, no, we did increase the price of fuel the time when the price of fuel went up. Because here in Zimbabwe, the problem is the short, the small money. You know, we are not using our own currency. So if the fuel is increased by cents, it's very difficult to increase by 20 cents or 30 cents. But we hope now with the introduction of the bond coin, we hope things are going to improve.
That was long-distance transport operator Isa Mfumi of Manicaland Province speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Villagers facing eviction from a Mazoe farm to pave way for First Lady Grace Mugabe's projects have filed charges of contempt of court against some top government officials and Police Commissioner General Augustine Chihuri. Their representative, attorney Tonderai Badasara, a member lawyer of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, says they filed the charges today at the High Court. The respondents are Home Affairs Minister Kembo Mohadi, Land Minister Douglas Mombeshora, and Police Commissioner General Chihuri. Badasara tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the respondents violated a High Court order which barred anyone from removing the villagers from Arnold Farm, also known as Manzo Farm.
We filed a court application this afternoon for contempt of court, and it's going to be served either today or tomorrow. And we also received instructions from the other residents of Arnold Farm for us to file an urgent chamber application to stop the police. You recall that last year only about five applicants approached the court, and we noticed that there's room for other applicants as well to then approach the court individually to seek the same relief that was sought by their colleagues.
Can you tell us what is in your court papers?
The application for contempt of court, we alleging for you to convince the court that a respondent is to be found guilty of contempt, you have to prove that there is an order in existence, which we have, that the order was served on the respondents or that it was brought to their notice or attention, which we did, and that the order has not been complied with, which they have failed. So we have managed to allege and we will be able to prove before the court all the requirements for contempt of court. And in relation to the urgent chamber application, we made the allegations that it's unconstitutional what is being done. It's a violation of the applicant's rights in terms of Section 74 of the Constitution, the right not to be arbitrarily evicted, and other rights that are associated to that, you know, the right to health, clean water and shelter, and so, which are provided in the Constitution. We also averred that they are being contravened by the police, by their actions, which actions are being done without a court order.
Who are the respondents?
The Minister of Home Affairs, the Commissioner General of the Police, and the Minister of Lands and Rural Resettlement.
That was lawyer Tonderai Badasara of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Following the collapse of Allied Bank yesterday, many people are wondering just how vulnerable Zimbabwe's banking sector is. Thousands of depositors, now locked out of their accounts, are also asking whether they will ever be able to get their money, and if so, when. To answer these key questions, Studio 7 reporter Ntungamili Nkomo turned to economic analyst Masimba Kuchera.
Well, basically, right now the accounts have been frozen until the process of liquidation takes place. So what is going to happen is that no one can transact with the Allied Bank. And since they've asked to be liquidated, it means the Reserve Bank and the other authorities are going to put together all the assets of the Allied Bank and sell them. And from that, they'll then try to average out how much depositors will be able to get.
At what stage will depositors be able to recoup their accounts?
Look, this process is a very complicated process. It could take close to a year, not going to be a very easy process. The people who are going to do the liquidation or the people who are going to be managing bank's liquidation are also going to be looking at who is supposed to get how much based on what the Allied Bank has in terms of assets. But what is clear is that depositors will not get 100% of assets, because the fact that this bank has closed down means that they are not able to sustain operations. So it means that depositors, investors, and all other creditors will not be able to get 100% of their money.
And the biggest question, of course, Mr. Guchera, is just how vulnerable or how strong is our banking sector?
Well, a lot of people say this country is overbanked. By 30 September last year, 14 out of 20 banks had complied with statutory requirements. And Allied Bank was one of the six which had not complied, and it's now shut down. So it means there is a bit of vulnerability. Although the banking system is strong, there seems to be too many banks for too few depositors at the moment.
Economic analyst Masimba Kuchera on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwean youths speak out on the country's economy and their future.
First, look at regional and international news.
French authorities say the two suspects in the Charlie Hebdo attack have been killed during a police raid, and a separate raid in the capital killed another gunman holding multiple hostages at a kosher supermarket. The two men, Sherif and Said Kochi, were holed up in a building north of Paris. Earlier reports indicated that a gunman was holding at least five hostages at a kosher supermarket in Paris, even as French security forces closed in on a town north of the city where the two main suspects in the Charlie Hebdo killings were holed up with another hostage.
A police official says the suspected gunman in the supermarket attack, 32-year-old Amadi Koulibaly, is believed to be the same man who shot and killed a police woman south of Paris on Thursday. Authorities are also seeking a woman described as his accomplice, Hayat Boumdien. Police sources have linked Koulibaly to Sherif and Said Kouchi, the brothers who are suspected of killing 12 people in the Charlie Hebdo attack on Wednesday. French security forces say they were in contact with the brothers before the latest developments.
A liberal Saudi blogger who was accused of insulting Islam has been flogged in public despite denunciations of the practice by the United States and rights groups. Witnesses say Raif Badawi received 50 lashes after Friday prayers as the worshippers looked on near a mosque in the Red Sea city of Jeddah. Badawi, co-founder of a website called the Liberal Saudi Network, was arrested in 2012. He was sentenced to 10 years in jail and 1,000 lashes after being charged with offenses including insulting Islam. He is expected to have 20 weekly sessions of 50 whippings each until his punishment is complete. Worried over the poor state of the country's roads, opposition leader Jacob Ngarivume of the Transform Zimbabwe Party and his members have taken upon themselves to patch the potholes in some cities. Ngarivume says he does not need to seek permission from the Zimbabwe National Roads Administration or ZINARA or local councils because they are the very authorities that are failing to do their job. This week, the party patched potholes at one of the dangerous spots along the Harare-Chitungwiza Road. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from ZINARA and the Harare City Council, but yesterday, Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyani wrote on his Facebook page that he had held a crisis meeting with the ZINARA board chairman Albert Mugabe at Town House over the pothole crisis. Ngarivume tells Studio 7 that because of the deplorable state of the country's roads during this rainy season, his party members around the country will do their best in repairing them.
Our roads have become deadly, and people have been going through accidents traveling on those roads. So we took it upon ourselves as a party. I have been encouraging people, as Transform Zimbabwe president, to take action in their local communities to fix the roads. And that is when we decided actually to say, okay, let us get going on this program. And all our members throughout the country have been taking to the roads to make sure that we fix the roads which are not good.
Do you first seek permission from Zinara or the local councils before you start repairing these roads?
We don't at all seek permission from Zinara, because I can tell you that Zinara is a shameless ripper. If you look at what they did recently, they in fact disbursed 0.75 million against an expected amount of 15 million towards road maintenance, which is only 0.05 of the expected target. But if you look at what is coming through as far as collection of toll fees is concerned, they have so far in the last 6 months collected about 130 million. But none of that is committed to repairing the roads and fixing the roads.
That was Transform Zimbabwe President Jacob Ngarivume on the phone from Bekita with Studio 7.
For some Zimbabwean youth, 2014 was simply the worst in the past few years due to the rising number of unemployed college graduates and the continued downturn of the local economy. But some do believe that there is space for innovative young people in the country in 2015. Here's a report filed by Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
Some youths that graduated in revered college and university fields such as engineering, medicine, and accounting have been literally reduced to street scavengers. Instead of working in their specific fields, they handle dirty dollar bills as combi touts, mostly in Zimbabwe's urban areas, where it is not even easy to land such an informal job. Some even pound the streets of Harare, Gweru, Kwekwe, Mutare, Bulawayo, and other cities, buying and selling various wares, which include mobile phone units and cabbages. Mekleo Mafumo, youth president of the Zimbabwe United Nations Association, an organization that seeks to further the objective of the United Nations working directly with grassroots and school children, says these young Zimbabweans are simply stuck.
There's nothing you can do. And for you to just sit at home, it becomes a serious issue. So you have to go there in town and find something to do. It's about finding something to do. It's no longer that we have to choose that to say, when I grow up, I want to be a journalist, then actually walk into the field of being a journalist. But now you have to take whatever comes into your option.
Fidelis Chima of the Wange Human Rights Youth Forum echoes these sentiments, saying 2014 was really bad for young people in his area and doesn't see an end to their suffering as 2015 starts rolling.
We saw a number of young people failing to get meaningful jobs. Young people did not participate in national processes. They did not participate in local governance. There's nothing promising, to be very honest.
Like other Zimbabweans, he says, unemployment is causing havoc among young people in the southern African nation.
The west part of it is that one gets rich with natural resources, but unfortunately young people have resorted to urban farming, which is very illegal. Some are now poaching, which is so unfortunate again. We are saying that is a symptom of a bad governance system.
The Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency, ZIMSTATS, says the country's unemployment rate stands at almost 11%, a figure that has been dismissed as baseless by independent economic commentators and groups. They believe that the unemployment rate in Zimbabwe is hovering at around 81%. Zimbabwe National Students Union spokesman Avoid Masirawa says the government is failing young people at all levels. Masirawa, whose organization lobbies for students' affairs in the country, says it's sad to see young people working hard to increase the human capital in Zimbabwe, and yet over 4 years of struggling to pay fees, find accommodation, and pass courses, they are left to sell airtime on the streets.
High schools, special institutions, they are breeders of human capital. And without human capital, there is no economic development. So in addressing the student plight, they are also addressing the issue of economic development. In addressing the student plight, they are also addressing the development of the nation itself.
Political infighting in ZANU-PF gripped the nation towards the end of 2014 as the party held a controversial Congress which saw the ousting of then-Vice President Joyce Mujuru and her allies, including ministers and members of parliament, by a faction of a party said to be led by newly appointed Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. As this fighting caught the attention of the nation, Zimbabweans waited to see how the internal strife would revitalize the economy. Nothing has materialized so far, and youths are becoming too agitated, thinking that their future looks bleak. President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party promised before the 2013 general election to create millions of jobs under a $27 billion five-year economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Social and Economic Transformation, or ZIMASSET. Mafumo says the solution is almost as simple as government officials hold the key to revitalizing the economy, which will in turn ultimately open up various opportunities for the country's youths. He says ruling party officials to stop fighting and concentrate on bread and butter issues.
We're yet to see what 2015 has to provide with the new government, although it seems like there's a bit of pulling and shoving within the ruling party, which is there. But no one is looking at the serious issues that are facing the people right now.
ZANU-PF leaning political analyst Morris Ngwenya agrees that ZANU-PF spent the end of 2014 trying to put its house in order, but believes that ZIMASSET will turn around the economy.
One of the biggest reasons was the problem that was solved at the Congress, the problem of some within ZANU-PF who had a regime change agenda. They were stalling each and every effort made by President Mugabe for the programs and all the processes that he designed.
For some Zimbabweans, ZIMASSET, which became part of a satirical joke last year, signals another failed attempt by the ruling party at reviving the economy. But Ngwenya, like other proponents of the plan, says the economic blueprint is much more than the 2 million job tagline.
I must say to the young people, they should be realistic and they should not look forward to perhaps a bumper employment year. But instead, they should really consider the SMEs, they should really consider self-employment and other projects. But those are really the key issues that should be looked into.
Despite the stalled implementation of ZIMASSET and the revival of the economy, some young people did show some signs of rocking the world. There were some success stories as several Zimbabwean youths managed to maneuver through the harsh socioeconomic climate to make their mark in the country and beyond. Some were among those who participated in the prestigious Barack Obama Mandela Washington Fellowship, while others created innovative technological advances like automating the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, utilizing social media to connect young people, running successful award-winning startup companies, earning local and international awards, and breaking barriers in education, health, and politics, all while assisting thousands of other young people in Zimbabwe. Lawyer and Mandela Washington Fellowship alumni James Bayanai, who is the director of the Zimbabwe Youth Development Fund, says there's a lot of potential among Zimbabwean youths. Bayanai, who says he never fails to recognize the plight that young people in Zimbabwe face, has a conviction that youth in the country are facing a unique situation.
Yes, of course, they are out of college and there are no jobs, but they must try to be innovative. It's not about getting a job. Of course, we need jobs to survive, of course, but if there are no jobs or if there are a lot of people in the labor market competing for jobs, which means now to make it to be accepted now under such circumstances, you just have to be innovative.
Bayanai adds young people in Zimbabwe can make it, but there is need for everyone, including young people, to make those moves to assist each other.
Of course, there are challenges along the way, but for me, if you come up with an innovative idea, because innovation is what we are lacking, you know, and once you become innovative, then you are exceptional and you get support. And also you'll create employment even for other young people.
Though there's a lot of pessimism among Zimbabwean youths about their future, others feel they can overcome several challenges through being innovative. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Tatenda Gumbo.
And now, an editorial reflecting the views of the American government.
The The International Labour Organization, or ILO, estimates that about 21 million people around the world are kept in slavery by those who would shamelessly profit from exploiting men, women, and children for labour and sex. In May, the ILO released a report estimating that the victimization of persons as modern-day slaves annually generates $150 billion in profits for the private global economy. The fact is that slavery occurs in every community, in every country, across the globe, including the United States. These victims face a cruelty that has no place in a civilized world, said President Barack Obama in a written statement. It is a crime that can take many forms, and one that tears at our social fabric, debases our common humanity, and violates what we stand for as a country and a people. Modern slavery is a crime that thrives in the shadows. In order to shine a spotlight on this scourge and to encourage governments, businesses, and private citizens to learn about human trafficking so that they may recognize it, President Barack Obama declared January 2015 to be National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. Every citizen can take action by speaking up and insisting that the clothes they wear, the food they eat, and the products they buy are made free of forced labor. Businesses and nonprofit leaders can ensure their supply chains do not exploit individuals in bondage. And the United States government will continue to address the underlying forces that push so many into conditions of modern-day slavery in the first place, wrote President Obama. During National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, we stand with the survivors, advocates, and organizations dedicated to building a world where our people and our children are not for sale. Together, let us recommit to a society where our sense of justice tells us that we are our brothers and sisters' keepers, where every person can forge a life equal to their talents and worthy of their dreams.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A United States couple has taken to Zimbabwean music as if it's their own. Tune in tomorrow for more details.
I just have to say it's something that to me speaks to the heart, you know. It moves me on a lot of different levels, emotionally, physically. You can dance, you can be quiet, you can think, you can get rowdy, you can stomp, you can drink, whatever. It's very human music.
There's something about the utter sincerity of the music. You know, you turn on the radio, it's hard to find music that feels so authentic.
On the Women's Forum tomorrow, we speak to Lillian Chorua, a lawyer who started a trust to help raise money for Zimbabwe's quadruplets born 7 months ago and are still stuck at a Harare hospital due to lack of accommodation.
So what I've done basically for now is I've registered a trust for them. The trust that we formed is called the Quadruplets Trust Club of Zimbabwe, which will benefit other quads as well in trying to fundraise for accommodation for the quads. So at the moment, our utmost urgency is in acquiring a conducive place of residence for the parents and the babies.
Don't miss this interview tomorrow on Studio 7. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners about issues of their choice.
Please, to join the conversation, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The government has ordered fuel traders to reduce the price of fuel, citing a drop of oil prices on the international market.
Villagers are facing eviction from a Mazoe farm to pave way for First Lady Grace Mugabe's projects have filed charges of contempt of court against some top government officials and Police Commissioner General Augustine Chihure.
And the shutdown of a local bank worries Zimbabweans.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington, D.C.
And this is Ndimiake Mokalieli in Washington wishing you a very good evening and a very great weekend ahead.